has invested in having workshops with the public to try to do more of this upfront work in identifying what people want to get out of these different control roles and testing them with models and basically having a little bit more back and forth earlier in the process. So this phase is coming to an end. We do have a peer review of all this scientific work. It's actually next week. It is available by webinar, and the meeting is in Boston, but you can listen via webinar as well. So basically, we're kind of getting to the end of this process of evaluating different control roles. We've had these workshops, as I mentioned. Sorry, I'm trying to kind of go a little quicker here. But if you've attended them, you know, it is a lot of technical work, but hopefully I think we are making some headway in terms of trying to come up with a common understanding of what people's primary objectives are. So to leave the control role stuff and to let you know about the other part of the amendment, this is the localized depletion idea. And I have still under development, the committee's actively still developing alternatives for this topic. But just to skip over this and show you by figure, because I think it's a little easier, there's a bunch of alternatives on the table. The first one is no action, which is Area 1A, people are familiar with here, or in brownish, is closed from June 1st to September 30th to midwater trawl year. So right now, under no action, if nothing else was changed, this was put into place in Amendment 1 to the herring plan to basically address some concerns about the removals of the large removals of herring in a relatively unique area and time. Another alternative has surfaced through the process. See this area in green off the backside of the Cape. We've definitely heard a lot of concerns through the process that, again, could warrant, in some people's opinion, some measures to address localized depletion on the backside of Cape. This 6 nautical mile buffer would close to all herring fishing if adopted, again, from June 1st to September 30th. So this is one alternative that's currently on the table. And there is a 2-year sunset attached to it so that, you know, after 2 years, we'd reassess that and see if it's, you know, doing its job or should stay or not. The rest of the alternatives are basically additional midwater trawl closures. The first one would be to extend the Area 1A through the entire year, so basically a ban on midwater trawl gear in Area 1A. And the rest of the alternatives are different kinds of buffers or closures, again, specific to midwater trawl gear. One alternative is basically all of these 30-minute squares around the Cape. Again, this would be a closure just to that gear type. And then over here, you'll see a bunch of buffer alternatives that are kind of being called. This blue one is 12 nautical miles. This one is 25, and this is 50. So as you can see, the range is really wide in terms of alternatives to address localized depletion and user conflicts. The council still has a lot of work to do in terms of really getting down to where this is headed, but it does seem that we have a very wide range. The committee has been meeting most recently, talking about whether there should be sub-options within those that broad range in terms of seasonal restrictions or gear restrictions. So these are not, the council hasn't considered these things yet, but just to let you know, the committee is still working on some additional measures to have seasonal components to some of those alternatives. There's also an idea that maybe Area 2, which is the herring management area to the farthest to the south over here, some of these alternatives may not apply to that area. So there's a lot on the table. It's still, this is kind of the time to engage for sure in developing these final alternatives. So the next steps on the screen, we have that peer review coming up next that I mentioned. We do have a plan development team, most likely that's the date to keep working on these alternatives. But the herring advisors is the industry meeting and committee in early April. This could be the meeting where we finalize that range of alternatives for both of those topics that I was mentioning. So, you know, it's an important meeting in terms of getting that final range together. The council will meet in April and may approve a range of alternatives. So we're still far from final selection of this stuff, but this would be potentially the meeting where we finalize that. If we don't finish that work, it could go to the next one. But in general, that's where we are in the process with Amendment 8. It is pretty long. If we have time, I just have one slide for each of these two other actions just to update you on other things we've been working on. Haddock was an issue, as you know, probably bycatch off on Georgia's Bank. And so the council did spend most of 2016 working on an action to address and potentially modify accountability measures that went into place because the herring fishery exceeded their haddock catch. Ultimately, I haven't read, you can see here, these are pretty substantial closures if the herring fishery exceeds their haddock allocation. So even though the council actually went with no action, so we didn't change any of these proposed AMs that are in place. Concurrently, the council was also looking at the allocation. So right now, the herring fishery receives 1% of the haddock allocation every year, and the council is actually recommending an increase to 1.5. So it's not approved yet, it's not official, but the council's recommending an increase. So if that is approved in 2017, the haddock cap will be larger for the herring fishery. It will actually be 801 metric tons, which is quite a bit larger than the fishery had this year, and as well as in 2015. So it is an increase both due to the 1.5% increase, but also because the stock itself is much larger. So that's the story with haddock. We didn't really modify anything in the recent action, but the hope and intent is that with more haddock to this fishery, the likelihood of triggering those AMs is lower, and hopefully those negative impacts will not be an issue. We'll have to see. Finally, there is also an industry-funded monitoring amendment that has been going on also for several years. This would be to allow councils to develop industry-funded monitoring programs to supplement the federally funded programs if it's not enough to get the coverage that people want to see. Included in that action is a specific program for herring and mackerel, and there's a lot of details. The council did recently make some preferred alternative recommendations, but this is a joint action with the Mid-Atlantic. So the Mid-Atlantic actually chose not to pick final measures at this point, and they're postponing it right now until you may be aware there's an ongoing pilot electronic monitoring program going on. So the Mid-Atlantic's preference was to wait until that completed before final decisions were made. The New England Council is still scheduled to take final action in April, so it's a little uncertain what that will mean if one council is going forward and one is not. So I think it's kind of, you need to stay tuned on that topic, it's possible that the herring and mackerel issues will be pulled out of the amendment if the New England Council feels ready to do that. So I didn't want to distract too much going into lots of different topics, but in general, the most pressing one that we'll be working on is Amendment 8 and some of these other ones on the side. So I think that's all I have. We certainly want to hear about ideas and concerns that you might have about how to set these annual catch limits. We also want to hear about, if this is the first time you've seen some of those alternatives for localized depletion. It is a big range. The council's going to want to hear what you think about all of those different ideas. So this is the time to do that and get involved with that amendment.
Thank you, Dee. Are there any questions or comments on council process, draft amendment 8, the hearing framework, or the IFM amendment?
I just wanted to clarify, Bart really asked a question. With some of the control rules that they're looking at, it's conceivable that we could end up, you could maybe tell me if I'm wrong, with a situation where we end up with half the quota or no fishing at all in certain years under some of these control rules. I'm just trying to make it clear for the people that are here how important it is.
Sure, Jerry, thanks for the question. So as I was trying to emphasize, how you set that control rule and how it works and how it's designed and the shape of all those different things do really make a big difference, and I didn't take a lot of time to... it's painful enough as it is, but yes, some of them, depending on how they're designed, can have a pretty drastic effect in some cases on the actual catch levels. It's a little premature still to say how much because the council still hasn't identified which control rules they're going to look at, but that is coming pretty soon potentially. There were some, at these workshops, we've been trying to compare a few where, yes, a 30% reduction to maintain stability and a certain amount of biomass for forage is definitely what some of the control rule alternatives would spit out, would be a reduction in those landings and the allocated amounts. But again, I would say probably after the council at our April meetings, when we have a better sense of which control rules, people can really start to see those numbers. But yes, that is kind of the point. The more you leave in the ocean for forage and other needs, the less that would potentially be coming across the dock. That's not the case with all of the control rules, but some of them, yes.
Other questions?
Don?
Sorry. Once those are determined, will those be available for public viewing also to see how those control rules will have an impact on landings? Will that be available in the public document?
Yes, for sure. Yep. We would be looking at those kinds of things, for example, at the next advisors meeting.
Any other questions for Dean? Seeing none, if you think of something during Megan's or my presentations, we can take further questions at the end. So thank you very
sure.
much, Dean. We're going to switch to Matt Hazen.
All right, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Megan, and I am the Menhaden FMP coordinator at the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission. I also am the lobster coordinator, so it's been an interesting time to have these two species kind of mesh together. So hopefully I can bring a unique perspective. But just a little bit about the commission for those who might not be familiar with who we are or what we do. We are comprised of the 15 Atlantic Coast states, and while the councils manage fisheries from 3 to 200 miles, we manage fisheries from 0 to 3 miles. So we focus on state waters. For Menhaden, all 15 states participate in the management, so it's a coastwide species, Maine to Florida. And then herring, which Terry will talk about in a little bit, is from Maine to New Jersey. We have regulatory authority under state waters, and we are charged to create fishery management plans that provide for the conservation of coastal fishery resources. And we work through quarterly board meetings, so four times a year. For example, the Menhaden Board will get together, and they will discuss stock status, any changes in regulations. And we have, obviously, many states on the board, but each state only gets one vote when a decision is up for action. So just a little Menhaden 101 here, so everyone's on the same page. They're also referred to as pogies or bunker. They are from Nova Scotia to Florida in primarily coastal waters, and they do have seasonal migrations where the larger and usually older fish make further migrations up north. So Maine, you're going to see some of the larger and older fish in the fishery. There are two sectors. We have a bait fishery, so that's when Menhaden is harvested for the lobster fishery, the blue crab fishery, or any recreational fisheries. And then we have a reduction fishery, and that's when Menhaden is harvested and it's reduced down for its fish meal and fish oil. And historically, there were over 20 reduction plants along the coast, but now there's only one plant left along the East Coast, and it is in Reedville, Virginia. In terms of the Maine Menhaden fishery, you guys had pretty large landings in the 1980s and early 1990s, but recently the landings have been a bit sporadic, and they're pretty dependent on the abundance of Menhaden. So Menhaden migrating further or far enough up north to the Gulf of Maine for you guys to be able to catch them. So my presentation today is going to focus on Amendment 3, but I think to start, it might be good to kind of look at where we are now and some of the concerns that have come up that have prompted this amendment. So currently, we manage Menhaden with single-species reference points. So what that means is we only look at the status or abundance of Menhaden when we consider whether the stock is overfished or if overfishing is occurring. And our most recent stock assessment was in 2015, and that came back with good news that we are not overfished and overfishing is not occurring. So overall, we're seeing an improvement in the stock. In 2013, we implemented the first total allowable catch for Menhaden. So if we can think of this as kind of the pie here, how many fish can you take out of the ocean? What's that total pie? And the TAC is set annually by the Menhaden Board. And the top chart there is the different TACs for the various years. And you can see it's generally increased, and that's in response to some of the positive news we've gotten out of stock assessments. We also have allocation, so that's how we divide the pie up. And right now we focus on state-by-state allocation, so each state gets a different slice of the pie. And it's based on average landings from 2009 to 2011. And this pie chart here on the bottom is trying to illustrate how it's divided up. And I think you can see pretty clearly that right now one state is getting the vast majority of allocation in the Menhaden fishery. That would be Virginia, and that's due to their reduction fishery. And that's followed up by New Jersey. Maine does get less than 1% of the Menhaden allocation. And then another part of our management program is the episodic events program. And this became particularly important for Maine this year. So under the program, we set aside 1% of the total tax, or our total pie, is set aside for episodic events. And we consider episodic events to be when a state uses its allocation before September 1st and can prove unusually large amounts of menhaden in their state waters. So this is something that Maine declared into this year, and as a state, you guys were able to harvest over 3 million pounds of menhaden under the program. The table here shows how much has been set aside each year, and then the different states that have participated, as well as how much they've landed. And what you can see is from 2013 to 2016, we're seeing more states participate in the program, and then also much higher catch. So in 2014, only 8% of that set-aside was used, and this year, 92% of that set-aside was used. So that's a pretty big change in just a few years. So there are two main concerns that we have with the current management program. The first is getting back to those single-species reference points and wondering if those are really the best way to manage menhaden. And the reason for this is that menhaden play a really important ecological role as a forage fish. So they support larger fish such as bluefish, striped bass. They support birds such as osprey, marine mammals, including humpback whales and dolphins. And so they do have an ecological value. And so one way we could consider managing menhaden is to assess the status of menhaden in relation to the status of other prey and predator species. Our second major issue is that current allocation may not be fair and equitable. And some of the things we try and think about when we think of allocation is the need to balance harvest between multiple gear types and regions, as well as the need to balance between the current and future needs of the fishery. And I think Maine is probably a pretty good example of this here, where we're starting to see more menhaden in your waters, and so we need to think about your current and future needs in the menhaden fishery. So it's these concerns which have prompted the board to initiate Amendment 3 in order to consider ecosystem reference points as well as other allocation methods. And this is our current timeline. So we're about halfway through the process. The commission has a two-step amendment process where our first step is a public information document. And this is more of a broad scoping document to ask the public what issues or concerns they may have in the fishery and what management alternatives they would like the board to consider. And we wrap that part of our process up in January. So now we're on to our second step, which is actually drafting the amendment. So this will include potential regulatory language that may be adopted. Right now, we are drafting Amendment 3, and we expect that to take through July 2017. And hopefully in August, the Menhaden Board will approve draft Amendment 3 for public comment. So this will make our public comment process from late August to probably early October 2017. And right now, the board is scheduled to take final action on Amendment 3 in November 2017. And that way, we can try and implement some of these regulations for the 2018 fishing year. So looking at what's included in Amendment 3, we're considering different reference points. So we have our current single species reference points. That would be our status quo. But we can also think about Menhaden-specific ecosystem reference points. So those are reference points which look at Menhaden's role in the ecosystem and the other fish that they interact with or support. Or we can look at more general ecosystem reference points that are for forage fish species. So these look at a multitude of forage fish species and provide guidelines on how to best manage that kind of group of fish. In terms of allocation, we're considering a wide range of allocation methods. So we have our state quotas, which would be our status quo. We could do kind of a twist on this, which is state quotas with a fixed minimum. So under this option, each state would get a fixed amount of quota. So for example, each state might get 1% of the total TAC, and then the rest would be allocated based on historic landings. We could do a coastwide quota. We could look at changes in the spatial or geographic range of Menhaden and pursue seasonal or regional quotas. We could look at those two sectors, the bait and the reduction fishery, and try and split up our allocation between those two sectors. We can look at the fleet capacity, so look at different gear types and see how much Menhaden they can land and see if it's appropriate to manage those different fleets in different ways. And then we can also look at an allocation strategy based on TAC, so changing our allocation method with how big that pie is or how big the TAC is. Obviously, very related to that is our allocation time frame. So currently, we use 2009 to 2011, but the board has expressed interest in pursuing other allocation time frames, some of which go back a bit further to consider the historic fisheries, some which look at a longer time series. So some of the options we're currently considering are 1985 to 1995, 1985 to 2016, 2012 to 2016, and then a weighted average between 1985 and 1995 and 2012 to 2016. And the idea behind a weighted average is that we consider both the historic fishery as well as current trends and try and find a balance between those two time frames. And then finally, the episodic events program. So we might see some changes in that. So some of the questions that we're trying to answer are who should be allowed to participate in that program. Right now, it's reserved for the New England states, but New York did receive authorization to harvest under it in 2016. So that prompts questions as to who can participate in the program, what percentage of tax should be set aside. So we're seeing a larger harvest under the program. Does that mean that we need to set aside more tax for episodic events? And then how do states prove an episodic event is occurring? We don't really have a set rule or criteria for how a state proves an episodic event. So how can we kind of create some set of guidelines that each state could abide by? So turning back to Maine here, what does this all mean for Maine? So in 2017, Maine's preliminary quota is roughly 171,000 pounds. And this will be finalized once we see final state landings from 2016. So that will tell us about any overages or any transfers that have happened. We also have 4.4 million pounds in the episodic set-aside. So if we have a situation like we did last year in Maine, the state could try and get approval from the board to participate in that program and harvest under the set-aside. And then we also have quota transfers. So quota can be transferred between different states. So if Maine finds themselves in a situation where they need more quota, they could look to a neighbor to see if they have some unused quota. In terms of 2018, it's kind of a big question mark at this point. And the reason is that we're hoping to take final action at the end of 2017, and many of those decisions will impact what happens in 2018. So in terms of our TAC, it may depend on what reference points are chosen and if the board chooses to implement ecosystem reference points. The quota available to Maine fishermen will depend on the allocation method and time frame that's chosen by the board. And then we could see some changes to the episodic events program, such as the amount of TAC that's set aside for that. So I'll finish here with how to get involved in Amendment 3. So as I mentioned, I think our public comment period will probably be in late summer, early fall. So we will be having public hearings, and then we also accept written comments. So that's one avenue to get involved. Another avenue is to write a letter to the board. We always are accepting comments. So if you have a comment to the board on Menhaden management, you can send it to comments@asmfc.org, and I'll make sure that that gets to the Menhaden board. And then you're also welcome to attend a board meeting. All of our meetings are open to the public, and information on the next board meeting can be found on our website. Thank you.
Thank you, Megan. Any questions on Menhaden and the day and or your dazzle? Thanks, Megan. Okay, thank you. As I mentioned earlier, I'm pitch hitting for Ashton Harp, the commission's Atlantic Herring FMP coordinator. So if I stumble over any of her presentation, don't blame her, it was me. As Megan and both Deisha or the area, the management areas that we all are used to working with, you know, we're the addendum that we're about to be having a commission vote on in public hearings is specific to Area 1A. As Dee mentioned, the Area 1A effort controls, there's seasonal quotas. Every year the commission has an annual vote at the fall meeting and reaffirms the 72.8% for the second trimester and 27.2% for the third trimester. And every spring, I see a number of folks in the audience here participate in the days out meeting. We get together, make a decision on the number of landing days per week. The history here of 2016, we started off with 3 days, went to 4 days, to 5 days, and then as we got into July last year, the landings hit the rate where we cracked it back down to 2 days and finally closed the fishery on September 18th. The 2015 fishing season, which I have to catch up on a slide with, said that we had, as you all remember, we had a fairly high rate of landings during the summer 2015. The fishery then closed on the August 28th. Here's a depiction of the landings by Area 1A, 1B, Area 2, and Area 3. As you all know, Area 1A is quite high in the summertime. And then it generally closes sometime in the fall. Some more history on 2014 and 2015 trends. The 2016 fishing season. We had a problem last year, as you all remember. Above average landings at the start of the season led to an ADMR putting together some emergency rulemaking, which were more restrictive than the season. The preliminary landing data is here, are depicted for 2016. And see a lot of main faces in the room. This is what we had in place last year. 15 trucks a week, 3 consecutive fishing days, 2 consecutive landing days. The harvester vessels were limited to landing once per 24-hour period. Harvester vessels were limited to making transfers from one carrier only and limited to receiving at sea transfers from one vessel per week. And these were specific to main vessels only. There was another vessel that was fishing out of and landing in Gloucester. This vessel is now subject to these rules. So draft addendum 1. Because of the herring shortages, the section had a vote at the fall meeting in Bar Harbor and initiated draft addendum 1. The intent is to develop additional management measures to ensure that the quota is spread throughout the entirety of each semester and consistent between the states and to address excessive capacity. And as I The alternatives are much the same as were in Maine's emergency rules. Implement state vessel landing reports, prohibit landings of herring caught during days out, weekly landings per vessel, landing restrictions on transfer at sea, different provisions for the small mast bottom trawl fleet, and to clarify the days out procedure. The tiered weekly landing limit, a lot of discussion at a number of meetings we have had in this state. It was a timing issue with section TC, the PDT, and the section felt that this type of management approach would not be ready for this year. So the section is seeking public comment at a concurrent scoping during our public hearing process related to tiered weekly landings. So what I'm hoping when we have our main public hearing on the 3rd of April in Wisconsin is a separate section specific to future, whether or not future action should be taken on tiered landings, and if so, what should it be. If there's sufficient interest in this, it will be reported back to the section. The section will consider for future development for fishing year 2018. The addendum timeline, fast track, faster than the council process, as Dean and I were just sidebarring. A draft addendum was initiated back in October, where here we are about to have public hearings. The final vote is anticipated to be at the Spring Commission meeting in May. Implementation this summer. To repeat myself, 6 o'clock at the Lincoln County Communications Center in Wiscasset on April 3rd. A lot of you folks I've seen there, and we're looking forward to having a good, good, robust set of comments to send in from the state of Maine. That's it in a nutshell. From Maine DMR's perspective, what we're hoping to do is to ensure that steady supply of fresh bait right through the middle of September like we did last year. There's not a lot of bait to go around. We know that. You know that. We're hoping that the menhaden can come back in a robust manner as it did last year, and we can continue to provide the lobster fishery with the bait that you need to have another great year as we did this year. So that's about what I have from pitch hitting for Ashton. What I'd really like to do would be to open it up to all of you for a sort of a round table discussion on what's next issues from your perspective. You know, should Maine consider something different than what the commission's proposing? Are there any further questions back to Dee about the council process? What should Maine do perhaps differently than we did last year for many? As you remember, we had some restrictions in order to parse out the episodic quota. So I turn the floor over to you. Our time. any questions? Sir?
Yeah, I haven't. Hello, my name is David Weingart. I haven't been at this for a while, but I'm wondering why we increase quotas. The information I look at online, we're at a 20-year high on menhaden, and we're at a 50-year high on herring. Why are quotas never a consideration?
It's a two-part answer. Dee's presentation depicted, we just set a 3-year specification for Atlantic herring. That's set in stone through 2018. It's a combined management process with a commission. The commission signed off to it. The menhaden quota is something different. Several years ago, when the previous amendment was implemented, there was concern that there was overfishing going on, and the commission process was quite restrictive, reduced the quota, and implemented the allocation process. It's really bitten the state kind of in the rear end. But the quota did go up for menhaden last year. There was a vote of the board this past year to hold the turn until next year when this amendment goes out to consider what the next quota should be for Menhaden.
Sorry, I understand the process. I don't understand why there's never conversation about increasing quotas, and it baffles me, some of this stuff. I'm looking at the more controls off the Cape or herring. I mean, I registered a school of fish that was 40 miles long off the Cape. This is why it secures England. But nobody ever even looked at that. I don't understand why we're doing more restrictive things instead of increasing quotas when we're at 50 and 20 year highs. I know what is in place right now is in stone, but 2018 is coming up quick. And that's actually my question.
Sure.
Why is there no talk?
Sure, that's a great question. There's constantly talk, certainly from the industry and from the management perspective. We do operate under the guidelines of best available science, and there is a herring benchmark assessment that's coming right up next year, this year, Matt. Perhaps you can address this question about herring science and benchmark, and how it impacts our the management advice that's provided in few short paragraphs.
I guess to get at your point, we're going to go through an assessment starting this year. Won't be available until 2018. We'll see what happens with the assessment, and then once that assessment is completed, it will go to people like Harry and SMC to determine what the quotas should be. We only make recommendations generally. As you suggested, there is some talk about increasing quotas if the stock can sustain it, but then there's other people that talk about reducing quotas at the same time.
And going back to Dee's slide there, there's a great interest from the part of industry in having stability. So the industry, in their discussions and negotiation comments with the council process, strongly advocates for 3 years of stability. So that's what they have. As Dee was saying, it's reflected out in the third year and it's balanced out over the course of 3 years. So it could go up and down per year, but for all of you that want to make your business plans, that's the one recommendation, strong recommendation we've heard. Beth.
To go to the point of best available science, one thing that the industry, the lobster industry and herring industry are held to is the best available science. And when the term localized depletion is talked about and discussed, we want to see the science to back it up. Because to push the midwater trawlers off 50 miles isn't going to be enough for the industry that's pushing that. It's just going to drive the cost of bait up even further. And when you talk about best available science, we want to see the best available science for localized depletion.
Well, best available science for the specifications also involves the input of what we call the Science and Statistical Committee, and the Council is required to stay within the bounds of their recommendations by law. Mike for John over here.
I probably don't need Mike. Why would you let the votes go 5 days a week in the middle of the season and then cut it back to two, and then nothing at the end of September on Australia?
Every year is a projection, and when the three states get together to try to maximize opportunities, we start off slow. In years past, we started off slow, figuring the bait market has been slower in June. It gets higher in July. But the rate of landings got so high that if they'd sustained themselves at the 5 days, we would have been in a more precarious place than we were the year before. The fishery would have been closed in the beginning of August rather than at the end of August. So it went from up to five and down to two, with a goal of trying to get, our goal was to keep it, the bait flowing through the middle of September, hoping and expecting that some fish would be coming in from offshore, in order to fill the last 2 weeks of the month up. It's pretty imprecise.
Is that adjustable via the year?
It's adjustable kind of month to month. We meet, we'll meet after this commission votes on this draft agenda. The section will meet to select the days probably at the end of May for the summer. And then we hardwire in dates every once a month to review the rate of landings and determine whether we should increase or decrease. Anybody else? Going once, twice? Well, please come, please plan to come to the April 3rd public hearing in Wiscasset. And if you can't come, please send your public comments in. Thank you, Dee and Megan, and thank you all for coming.